said. Things will never be like that again. If you're old enough to go to high school, then you're old enough to work. I thought I'd finish high school and go to college because my parents did. It wasn't something we discussed much. It was just assumed. You would have done great. You're a hell of a smart guy. I'm not, I protested. With no common sense whatsoever, Darla added. Besides, I wasn't asking about that. I was asking about us. I don't know, I said. Darla tried to pull away from me, but I held her close. My uncle said we might grow apart, and I know he was right. We won't. That's not what I mean. He was right that most relationships don't last long. My friends hardly ever dated anyone for more than a month. The only other girlfriend I had, Celine, lasted 2 months. I've never had a girlfriend as long as you. Me either. A boyfriend, I mean. And I think I love you more now than I did the first time I said it. Me too. We were quiet for a moment. I knew what I wanted to say, but it was bound to come out all wrong, or hopelessly corny. Eventually, I gave up thinking about it. If we're all going to die anyway, I want to die with you. And if we live, I want to live with you. Like, get married? I hadn't really thought about it that way. But wasn't that what I just said? That I wanted to live with Darla? Forever? The idea of it was thrilling. And terrifying. I don't know, I'm only 16. It's hard to make plans. Darla wrapped one arm around her shoulder, hugging herself. I mean, who knows if we have a future, if we'll survive that long. We will. I peeled her hand away from her shoulder and held it. I mean, if there's no future, what's the point of trying? We'll find my parents. Things will get better. I used to love to daydream about growing up. About what my kids might look like, Darla said wistfully. I always thought I'd have a farm. A big red barn. Fields of corn and soybeans. Maybe a few head of milk cows. 5 or 6 kids running around. 5 or 6? Yeah, being an only child sucked. So I always wanted to have lots of kids. Now, I don't know. Before, I never really thought about kids much. Well, to be honest, I'd thought about the process of making them a lot, but not the result. Now, I don't want any. Not unless things get a lot better. I've wanted a big family since I was a little girl. Well, if things do get better, I said, you're going to need someone to take care of all those kids while you work on the farm, and to, help make all those kids. You don't get out of farm work that easy, Buster, Darla said. You can watch the kids some days, but some days you're going to have to drive the tractor. You don't do your fair share, and I'll make those kids with a turkey baster, see if I don't. Do I even want to know how that works? Duh, you. No, I really don't want to know. It's just that the problem with me driving a tractor is, well, you have no clue how to, right? Yeah. I always imagined marrying someone who loved farming, not some city slicker. I shrugged. Well, you can't always get everything you want. If I can't have everything I want, Darla said, then you can't either. Huh? Well, like getting married and having kids, we can do all that someday. But you remember what you said you wanted when we started this whole conversation? No. Good, 'cause you can't have it. Darla poked me hard in the shoulder with one finger. You said you wanted to sleep. She pushed herself up on her arms and kissed me. I decided that sleep could wait, at least for a while. Chapter 14. Early the next morning, we set to work repacking Bikezilla. By the time we were ready to go, everyone else was up. So we had to say goodbye for the second time in 3 days. Coming back to the farm had its disadvantages, although when I thought about the night before, I decided the benefits outweighed them. Not just the making out, either, although that was fun. After our talk the night before, I felt closer than ever to Darla. Closer than I'd ever felt to anyone. We finished our goodbyes and set out, staying on the route we'd mapped out with Uncle Paul. I'd fully expected to spend the day dodging bandits or FEMA patrols out to catch us and stick us in a camp. They got paid by the government according to the number of refugees they housed, so they were always looking to put stray people into their camps. Thankfully, though, the roads were deserted. Early that afternoon, we turned off South River Road onto the access road that led to Mississippi Lock and Dam No. 12. We biked up a railroad embankment, and Darla slammed on the brakes, bringing Bikezilla to a sliding stop. Across the road ahead, I saw the chain-link gate we'd climbed over during our trip last year. But behind it, there was something new, a guard shack about 8 feet square with light pouring from its windows. Black Lake's eagle logo was stenciled next to a window on the shack's side. Darla whipped Bikezilla into a turn, and we took off again. We'd gone about a mile when Darla finally quit pedaling and craned her neck to peer behind us. I looked, too. The road was deserted. "You think they saw us?" Darla asked. "I don't know. Let's go check." "Let's not and say we did. Just go around and avoid the lock." "I want to know if they saw us, if they're going to be looking for us. And we promised Uncle Paul we'd try to get some wheat." I got off the bike. "You promised, not me." "Right." I got the bolt cutter off the load bed. Darla scowled, but helped me hide Bikezilla on the other side of the berm. We trudged back to the shack, taking cover behind the berms and railroad embankment. When we got close, Darla stopped to cover me with the shotgun, and I dropped to my hands and knees. I crawled up to the fence. If anyone came out of the shack, they'd see me for sure. But if they were just casually glancing out the windows, the corner of the shack would block me from their view. With the bolt cutters, I opened a hole in the fence just big enough to slither through on my belly. The snow rasped against my coveralls as I crawled to the building and hid beneath one of its windows. Slowly, I lifted my head to peek over the windowsill. Inside, two guys in camo sat at a small table playing cards. They'd slung their assault rifles over the backs of their chairs. Three piles of wheat kernels lay between them. I felt a stab of envy. The seeds they were pushing back and forth so casually across the table were worth a fortune. If we could grow them in the greenhouses, we could have real bread again instead of cornbread and corn pone. A bottle of Grey Goose vodka sat on the table between them, about half empty. The guards were wholly absorbed in their game, not even glancing out the windows. I crawled back to Darla. "Two guards," I whispered, "playing cards. They're betting with piles of wheat. Might be drunk. We could take them easy." "Let's see what's going on at the lock. Maybe we can get some wheat off one of the barges without fighting. And we can make sure the river is frozen while we're there." "It is." We walked toward the river, keeping the snow berm between us and the road. It was exhausting to push through the deep snow, so I wasn't paying much attention to where we were going. We'd walked about 15 minutes when I stepped out into thin air. I grabbed at Darla's hand, trying to regain my balance, but all I accomplished was pulling her with me over the drop-off in front of us. We tumbled and slid down a steep slope. I lost hold of Darla somewhere along the way and slammed into a horizontal surface at the bottom, sliding a few feet before coming to rest. My shoulder and side hurt, but otherwise I thought I was okay. "Darla," I whispered. "Yeah, over here." I turned over and crawled toward her. The surface was hard and slick under my gloves, ice. "You all right?" "Yeah, I think so." We'd fallen down a steep embankment onto ice. I didn't think we were on the Mississippi itself, maybe one of the pools or inlets that I'd seen on the map, reaching out from the river's banks like pudgy fingers. "Try to climb back up?" I asked. "No, let's follow the embankment down here. We'll be invisible to anyone up on the road." Darla took my hand and led the way, walking on the ice. After a few hundred feet, the bank started to meander. Tree limbs jutted from beside it and above us. For a while, we moved through some kind of narrow, frozen channel. In a few places, it was tight enough that I could almost touch the trees on either side. I heard a faint roar of falling water, growing steadily louder as we walked. The channel we were following opened up suddenly, and I saw a small pool of open water, beyond which stretched the wide expanse of the frozen Mississippi. On the far side, trapped by the ice and the steel jaws of the lock, was the barge we'd visited the year before. Dozens of soldiers swarmed all over it. Chapter 15. The soldiers were busy as ants. Darla and I stood in plain sight, but a long way from them, maybe 3 or 4 miles across the river. I clambered up the snowy bank next to us. At the top, a grove of trees had caught the blowing snow, holding it into a deep drift. We dove in and hollowed out a foxhole, protected from the chill wind and suspicious eyes. I raised my head above the lip of our foxhole. The river was mostly frozen. The noise of rushing water came from a pool just below us, where the water cascaded over the roller dam and crashed into the river, keeping a small section of it from freezing. Sprays from the churning water had frozen around the pool, creating fantastical shapes that appeared to grow out of the ice. A red dump truck was parked on the ice, backed up against the barge at the far side of the river. The soldiers were loading the truck, passing grain along a line in 5-gallon buckets, like an old-time fire brigade. Another line of soldiers was moving the empty buckets from the truck back to the barge's hold. From our vantage point below the dam, we couldn't see the other two barges that had been here last year, stuck in the ash and muck above the dam. "I told you the river would freeze hard," Darla said. "I believed you, well, until I heard the water. Then I wasn't so sure." "Pretty efficient way to unload the barges, I guess." "We're never going to get anywhere near that wheat with all those soldiers around."
"Forget about the stupid wheat already. Christ!
We owe Uncle Paul. And besides, wheat might be good to trade. It's got to be almost as valuable as kale seeds."
"Whatever. I think we should just focus on finding your folks."
I nodded, frowning, and Darla led the way out of the foxhole. We kept to the woods until we were completely out of sight of the barge. The river ice was still and quiet. We neither saw nor heard sign of anyone else, although occasionally we could see the scuff marks we'd left earlier. The embankment where we'd fallen was a challenge. It was covered with a crusted, icy snow, too slick to climb easily. I kept sliding backward until Darla took the lead and started kicking toeholds in the snow. As we got closer to the guard shack, I heard a noise ahead, a low rumbling.
"What's that?" I whispered.
"Engine, a big diesel," Darla replied. "Let's look." We wormed our way to the top of the snow berm and poked up our heads. A Humvee painted in desert camo was parked next to the hut. As we watched, the two guards I'd seen earlier stumbled out and piled into the Humvee. The guy driving did a clumsy 5-point turn, tapping the snow berm with his front bumper and the guard shack with his rear. Then he pulled through the gate, and a passenger jumped out to close and padlock it. I held my breath, hoping he wouldn't notice the hole I'd cut in the fence. But he was in a big hurry and didn't spend any time looking around. When they started out again, the Humvee lurched forward, almost stalled, and then bounced over the railroad embankment out of our sight.
"Did they abandon the hut?" I whispered.
Darla frowned.
"I doubt it. Let's get the bike and move on."
"I want to check the hut first. Maybe they left some wheat." Darla shook her head, but got the shotgun ready anyway. I crawled along the snowbank toward the hut. When I got there, I peeked over the windowsill. One guy in camo fatigues and a black watch cap was sitting at the table. A pile of wheat kernels was spread in front of him, along with 5 or 6 purple cloth Crown Royal whiskey bags. He was counting the wheat seeds and sorting them into the bags. He sat facing the hut's door, but was so absorbed in his task that he didn't see me. I crawled back along the snow berm to Darla.
"There's only one guy in there now, and he's got wheat."
"I can't shoot a guy just to get wheat."
"Who said anything about shooting him? Just hold the shotgun on him and I'll tie him up or something."
"What if he goes for the gun? Then I'll have to shoot him."
I shrugged. "You ready?" I guess.
We crawled back to the guard shack together. Everything was still. We hid under the window. When I'd caught my breath, I peeked over the windowsill. The guard was still messing around with the bags of wheat. We slithered around to the other side. A sliding glass window faced the road, kind of like a fast food drive-through. Next to that was the door, a normal metal entry door with a lock on the handle and a deadbolt. I crawled up to it, reached up, and slowly, very slowly, tried turning the knob to see if it was locked. It was. Darla pantomimed a kick. I shook my head. She had more confidence in my taekwondo skills than I did. Even with a perfect kick, I might not break the door, and then we'd completely lose the advantage of surprise. I waved at Darla to follow and crawled around the shack to the opposite side. We peered through the window. The guard's back was to us. His assault rifle dangled from his chair. He seemed to be completely absorbed in sorting the wheat. I raised my head to examine the window. It was an ordinary double hung, like the ones we'd had in my house at Cedar Falls. A brass latch at the top of the lower sash held it closed. I ducked back below the windowsill and pantomimed my plan to Darla. She nodded after I went through it once, but I did the whole thing again just to make sure. By the time I finished, she was scowling and rolling her hands as if to say, "Get on with it." I held up three fingers. 2, 1. Chapter 16. We stood simultaneously, and Darla rammed the barrel of the shotgun through the window. The clash of breaking glass shattered the stillness. The guard swiveled in his chair and yelled, "What the—" "Hands in the air!" I bellowed. His face tightened as he took in the broken window and shotgun. "Get your hands up, now!" Darla yelled. The guard raised his hands slowly, muttering all the while, "For shit's sake, how many times do I have to tell the captain it's not safe to have one guy here?" "Guess he'll believe the next guy," Darla said. She bashed out more of the window glass, using the barrel of the shotgun. I reached through, careful to keep my arm away from the business end of the gun, and unlatched the window. Darla backed up a step so I could push the sash open. "You gonna flens me?" the guard asked. "Might not. You look stringy to me," Darla said. "Hardly worth the trouble." "Maybe you don't have any shells for that shotgun." "You can test that theory. You'll find out the truth a millisecond before you die." Darla moved to the side as I crawled through the window. I stood up behind and to one side of the guard, trying to stay out of Darla's line of fire. I took the assault rifle off the back of the chair and slung it over my shoulder. "Hand over the wheat," I ordered. "Well, why don't you ram a barrel brush up my ass while you're at it? That's a whole week's pay." "Black Lake pays you in wheat?" Darla asked. "Only idiots take cash. There's nowhere to spend it." He had a radio on his belt and a couple of leather pouches. The first one I unsnapped had an extra magazine for the rifle, which I took. And the second, I found what I really wanted. 3 sets of plastic zip-tie cuffs. "I'd buy the wheat from you if you promised not to report us." "Alex," Darla said, complaint clear in her voice.
"Buy it with what?"
"Kale seeds. You could say you broke the window leaning back in your chair too far or something."
"I wouldn't know kale seeds from bird droppings. How would I know you weren't cheating me?"
"It's not like you have a choice," Darla snapped. "Hands behind your back," I ordered. He lowered his hands behind the chair back, and I slipped the plastic cuffs over his wrists, cinching them tight. Then I used the other 2 sets of cuffs to affix his legs to the chair.
"I broke the window by accident and cuffed myself to the chair by accident, too?"
The guard snorted. I checked his belt and found the knife I expected on the other side. I pulled it off his belt and tossed it into the corner. I threw his radio into the corner, too. "Cut yourself free after we've gone." I reached into my jacket, carefully extracting 1 envelope of seeds from the cloth bag. I laid it on the table in front of the guard.
"Christ," Darla said. "Those things don't grow on trees."
"Sure they do," I grinned at her. "Haven't you ever heard of a kale tree?" She shook her head and glared at me, but I saw a hint of a smile at the corner of her mouth. Then she tensed up.
Shit, somebody's coming!
She glanced around wildly. Then she dove through the open window into the shack with me. I heard the rumble of a diesel engine and a grinding noise as the driver shifted gears.
It's a dump truck, Darla said, popping up once to glance out the window. Tall one.
The truck pulled up alongside the guard shack. The driver's window was so high off the ground that there was no way he could see us. An arm reached down from the truck, holding a clipboard, and tapped it against the glass four times. The guard we'd cuffed started to yell,
Hey!
Darla wrapped her hand around his mouth.
Shut up,
she whispered. I took a step toward the window. But Darla had just come in through there to avoid being seen. I froze, unsure what to do. The radio in the corner crackled to life.
Hey, Benson, quit fooling around. We've got a schedule to keep. DC ain't getting any closer while you jack off.
I had to do something. Now. I ripped the watch cap off the guard's head and jammed it on my own. I stepped up to the window, looking down so that only the top of my head would be visible to the driver, hopefully. I slid the window open and took the clipboard. I cleared my throat and grunted,
Sorry,
like I had a cold or something. The clipboard held a manifest for a truckload of grain, 600 bushels, to go someplace called the Interim Quartermaster and Food Services Authority in Washington, D.C. There was a space for a signature marked Gate Checkpoint, Originating Station, so I grabbed the pen dangling on a string by the window and scrawled an unreadable signature and date. I passed the clipboard to the driver, praying I'd get away with it, praying he wouldn't notice my shaking hands or the sweat dripping from my wrist. He took the clipboard, and there was a long pause. I balanced on the balls of my feet, ready to run.
Benson, you dickwad! How long are you going to make me wait to countersign anyway? It's already going to be after dark when I make Atterbury.
I glanced around in a panic.
Countersign? Countersign what?
A clipboard rested on a little table near the window. I grabbed it. A whole stack of papers was clamped in its jaw. I flipped through them. There were two types. One labeled Personnel Transit Record, the other labeled Freight Transit Record. I moved a blank copy of each to the top of the stack and passed the clipboard to the driver, keeping my head low and my face out of sight.
You couldn't even fill out the basic shit for me? Well, get the gate open while I do your damn job for you.
I took a step toward the door. Then things started to happen way too fast. Darla screamed an involuntary yell that she cut off in an eye blink. I looked. She had pulled her hand away from Benson's mouth. Both her hand and his mouth dripped blood. He started shouting,
Security breach! Security breach!
Over and over again at the top of his lungs. I heard a clatter and turned my head back toward the truck. The driver had whacked his gun on the truck window frame in his haste to shoot me. Darla screamed,
Down!
And her shotgun went crunch crunch as she chambered a shell. Benson threw himself sideways, chair and all, hitting the floor with a crash. I dove the other way. I heard a pop, 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 and then a deafening boom followed by the crash of breaking glass. Darla screamed,
Go!
The driver was holding his gun out the window. His arm was a dripping mess of raw meat and blood. Darla's shotgun blast and the resulting flying glass had shredded it. The gun slipped from his fingers and fell between the truck and the hut. Darla hurled herself through the window on the other side of the shack. I scrambled to my feet, swept the bags of wheat and the kale packet off the table, and jammed it all into my coat. I stepped over Benson and launched myself through the window, following Darla. We slithered through the hole I'd cut in the fence and sprinted along the snow berm toward Bikezilla. It was either eerily silent or the shotgun blast had deafened me. Given how my ears were ringing, maybe some of both. I risked a look back. The dump truck was still parked beside the guard shack. I couldn't see anything moving, but you could have hidden a platoon behind the hill of snow between us and them. Just that quick look had given Darla time to get about 20 feet ahead of me. By the time I caught up to her, she was struggling over the snow berm to where we'd hidden Bikezilla.
You get the wheat? She huffed.
Yeah, and the kale seeds. How's your hand? I gasped.
Hurts. I'll live.
We pushed the bike upright, stowed the pistol, shotgun, and assault rifle, and took off. We both stood on the pedals, straining to get the beast moving. In a few seconds, we were flying away from the snow berm on virgin snow. I wasn't sure why we were going deeper into the area Black Lake was guarding instead of trying to get out. Maybe Darla figured they wouldn't expect us to double back. I didn't know exactly how we'd get past the fence or down the embankment on Bikezilla either. But I didn't have the lung capacity to ask while we were pedaling like maniacs. I hoped she knew what she was doing. We bounced up the railroad embankment and braked hard, skidding down the backside. We came to a complete stop by crashing into the chain-link fence.
"Hurry! Cut the fence!" Darla ordered.
I grabbed the bolt cutters and started chopping chain-link as fast as I could. We needed a huge hole to accommodate Bikezilla. Luckily, we were far enough south of the guard shack that we couldn't see it and, presumably, couldn't be seen. I finished up the hole, stomping flat the huge piece of chain-link I'd cut out. Darla nearly ran me down in her haste to push Bikezilla through. She didn't stop either. I had to stow the bolt cutter and remount the bike while it accelerated away from the fence. As we approached the steep slope down to the river, Darla didn't slow down. If anything, she was speeding up. I yelled and tried to back off my pedaling, but the pedals on Bikezilla were ganged together. I had no choice but to keep up with Darla's frenetic pace. And all the brake controls were at the front of the bike.
"Hold on!" Darla screamed,
and we were airborne. The back end of the bike hit the slope with a thump. Then the front end slapped down, and I was pitched forward, my head thudding into Darla's back. We careened down the slope, totally out of control. When we hit the ice at the bottom, the front ski flexed almost 45 degrees, but nothing broke. And just like that, we were out on the river ice. We still both stood to pedal, but slightly slower than before.
"I'm going to head south," Darla grunted. "Cross the open part of the river, somewhere out of sight from the lock."
"Sounds good," I yelled.
"You think we're in the clear?"
"Yeah." Then I heard an engine rumble behind us. Chapter 17. I glanced back. A Humvee was rolling down the embankment we'd just flown down. The slope was so steep it looked like the truck would tip forward and tumble down end over end, but it didn't, unfortunately. I redoubled my efforts at the pedals. Darla veered left. The ice was slick and fast, dusted here and there with a little snow. We were moving quicker than we ever had on Bikezilla. Still, I didn't think we'd be a match for the truck. We pedaled south on one of the dozens of frozen lakes that lined the Mississippi. As we raced for the far bank, I looked back. The Humvee was down the embankment, accelerating towards us across the ice. It veered slightly, so I could see the passenger window roll down and a rifle barrel emerge. Chips flew from the ice around us as bullets struck, and I heard the rattle of automatic gunfire. I screamed,
"Darla! Shoot back!"
I twisted and tugged at the shotgun. Freeing it or the assault rifle from the ropes one-handed was hopeless. I couldn't quit pedaling, and I couldn't twist back far enough to reach both hands into the load bed. I snatched the pistol instead. I aimed at the Humvee closing fast behind us. The passenger's head, covered by a black ski mask, was out the window now. He withdrew into the vehicle as I pointed the pistol at him. Two bullets. I waited. We were less than halfway across the lake, and the Humvee was closing in fast, seeming to swell in size even as I watched it approach. The rifle barrel appeared again in the window. I pulled the pistol trigger. Nothing happened. It wouldn't even depress. The safety. I'd forgotten the safety. I poked it with my thumb, trying to snick it off without dropping the pistol as the new fusillade tore up the ice around us. I pulled the trigger again. Click. Nothing happened. I'd forgotten to rack the slide. I brought the pistol back in front of me, took both hands off the handlebars for a second, and jerked back the slide. The truck was right behind us and a little to our left now, still accelerating, preparing to turn us into a hood ornament. The passenger was hanging his head out the window again. I took aim and fired. My shot whanged off metal.
The passenger and rifle withdrew. The truck was almost on top of us.
"Darla!" I screamed.
She cranked Bikezilla into such a tight right turn that half the rear track lifted off the ice. I leaned into it, hoping to keep us upright. Our pursuers tried to mimic our turn, but spun out, quickly turning three full circles as they slid south, away from us. Darla straightened the bike, and the back end thumped onto the ice. Now we were headed roughly northwest, in the middle of the lake, and the closest bank was probably ahead of us. We flew several hundred yards before the Humvee came out of its spin and started accelerating towards us again. My neck worked overtime, twisting backward every few seconds. I couldn't figure out what they were doing. They were way out to our left and behind us, not on a direct route to intercept us. When the Humvee pulled even with us, about 100 yards to our left, it became clear what the driver was doing. He drifted into a long turn designed to intersect our course and splatter us all over the ice. There was no way we'd make it to the trees at the edge of the lake. The passenger leaned out his window and started firing at us again.
"Darla!" I yelled again.
"I'm on it!" she gasped, but she kept us on the same course, still pedaling like mad. I aimed the pistol again. Click. Nothing happened when I pulled the trigger. I pulled it again, but the trigger wouldn't even depress. Did I need to rack the slide again? I tried it, and a bullet flew out. A dud, I guessed. We raced toward a deadly crash. 60 yards, 40 yards. The passenger aimed his rifle at me. I was out of bullets. I pointed the pistol at him anyway, and he flinched. 20 yards, 10. I threw the pistol at him, catching him right in the eye. His shots flew wild. Every one of my muscles tensed for the impact.
"Darla!
Stop! Now!" She slammed on the brakes and jammed the pedals to a stop so abruptly that it hurt my ankles and knees. We skidded along the ice. The Humvee shot by in front of us. Our front ski missed their rear tire by inches.
"Go, go!"
Darla yelled as she turned Bikezilla directly toward the Humvee. It was braking, the tires carving two shallow troughs in the ice. We picked up speed, heading directly toward the truck's back bumper. I thought I understood what Darla was doing. The Humvee would have to turn in a wide arc to get lined up to try to run us down again. By then, maybe we could make it to the woods. But the driver wasn't cooperating. He skidded to a complete stop, almost putting the nose of the Humvee into the woods. But instead of turning around, he started backing up, straight towards us.
"Christ!" Darla screamed. "Male drivers!"
She kept accelerating directly toward the Humvee as it raced backward toward us. Playing chicken with a truck 50 times our size didn't seem like a great idea to me, but I wasn't in the driver's seat. And Darla had dodged the truck twice now. One more time, and we'd make it to the woods.
"Yeah!"
Darla screeched a banshee wail.
"Faster!"
I was already white-knuckling the handlebars, pumping for all I was worth. A drop of blood oozed out between Darla's right hand and her handlebars and was whipped past me by the wind. The back of the Humvee loomed. I wanted to close my eyes. I couldn't close my eyes. At the last second, Darla swerved left. The driver of the Humvee swerved too. The truck's front quarter panel swiped Bikezilla's load bed just behind my right leg. We were thrown into a spin. I was sure we'd roll, but Darla steered into the skid, pedaling like mad, and somehow kept us upright. She shot between a pair of trees that were too close together to admit the Humvee. We were racing along a tiny frozen creek, forest lining either side. I looked back and almost got knocked off the bike when an overhanging branch smacked me in the side of the head. I didn't see any sign of the Humvee. Both banks of the creek were overgrown with leafless bushes and trees. I had to watch Darla carefully. When she ducked, I had a split second to follow or get whacked by a branch. Several times, Darla threw an arm up to block them instead. The branches were dead and shattered easily, bits of dry wood spinning away as we whizzed past. Drifts of snow had covered the ice here and there. I felt these as much as saw them. It got much harder to pedal, and Bikezilla rose and fell slightly, following the contours of the blown snow. Suddenly, we burst out of the narrow confines of the creek onto another lake. Darla steered the bike in a broad left turn. We'd been following this new course less than a minute when I started to hear a faint new sound under the chatter of our rear track, the roar of falling water. I yelled, "Is that the roller dam? Yeah," Darla yelled back. "We're headed right toward the barge and all those soldiers. Look for a place to turn left." "Up there?" I pointed.
Darla was already steering toward the break in the trees I'd seen. We turned into the new channel, a broad, straight stretch of river. It would have been easy to pedal down it except for one thing. The Humvee was again accelerating across the ice, directly toward us.
Chapter 18. The Humvee was about a mile south of us, but racing north fast. Both banks of this stretch of river were densely forested. I didn't see any place we could get off the river ice. Darla braked hard and spun us into a tight turn, and we stood on the pedals, accelerating north away from the Humvee.
"Darla, look!" I yelled and pointed. "I see it!"
To the north, there was a break in the trees, a path barely big enough for Bikezilla, its opening flanked by two huge cottonwoods that would prevent the Humvee from following us. Darla steered straight toward it. My legs burned. We'd been pedaling flat out since we left the guard shack more than half an hour ago. My body was coated in cold sweat from exertion or terror, I wasn't sure which. I tried to coax one more burst of speed from my body, but I could barely maintain our current pace. Darla was exhausted, too. I could hear her gasping for air even over the clatter of Bikezilla. If anything, we were slowing down. But then I heard the Humvee's engines revving behind us and discovered I did have some hidden reserve left. I bore down on the pedals and we shot forward, a missile homing in on the safety of the trees ahead. There were no tricks left, no fancy maneuvers. If we kept playing chicken with the Humvee, eventually we'd lose. There was no gunfire. Maybe I'd actually done some damage by throwing the pistol. The rumble of the engine behind us crescendoed. I looked back. We weren't going to make it. I braced myself uselessly, thinking a collision was inevitable. But suddenly the gap between us and the Humvee widened. The truck braked, sliding toward us across the ice. We shot between the cottonwoods and up a snowy slope. The Humvee slammed into one of the trees with a shriek of tortured steel. We reached the top of the ridge we'd been climbing, and the trail leveled out, leading to a large clearing with a huge oak. Its branches spread so low we had to duck to pass beneath it. At the far side of the meadow, the trail dove back into the woods, down the other side of the ridge toward the river. Blood rushed in my ears, and my breath came in gasps. But even over the noises of my body, I heard a roar ahead, water rushing over the roller dam. We came around a bend and the woods opened up, the trail suddenly ending at the frothing pool at the base of the dam. Darla slammed on the brakes, but Bikezilla slid inexorably toward the pool.
"Darla!" I screamed. "Jump!"
She swerved, trying to miss the open water. I jumped and landed with a thud in the snow on the hillside. The bike fell sideways, trapping Darla's leg and dragging her in a rush toward the deadly, roiling water at the base of the dam. Chapter 19. Without hesitation or forethought, I jumped. I stretched out in a flying leap, Superman style, hurling myself down the hill toward Darla. I landed half on top of her, our arms entangled, both of us sliding toward the frothing water. Darla was digging her fingers into the snow, desperately trying to stop her slide. But the weight of Bikezilla, trapping her leg, dragged us toward the edge. I dug my toes into the hillside, groaning with effort. We slid to a stop. Bikezilla's rear track hung out over the water. Ice from the spray was already freezing on our gear.
"I've got you," I whispered through clenched teeth.
Darla wrapped one arm around my shoulder.
"Maybe you could pull me away from the water now, numbnuts."
I heaved a huge sigh of thanks and started tugging Darla back toward the bank. A sound like a gunshot rent the air, and the ice under Bikezilla broke. I watched in horror as the whole sheet was instantly sucked under by the vicious undertow. Darla's legs fell into the pool. She twisted, clinging desperately to me. I scrabbled backward, trying to stay on the unbroken ice. Bugzilla slid off her, sucked down into the gray, foaming water. The undertow pulled at Darla. It was surprisingly strong. I felt like I was playing tug-of-war with the river, with Darla as the rope and both our lives hanging in the balance. I couldn't get enough leverage on the icy bank to drag her out of the river. I tightened my grip on her. I would not let go. If Darla got dragged into the river, I'd go with her. Darla heaved her right knee up, trying to get it up over the ice shelf, but she bashed it instead against the edge of the ice. I plunged my left hand into the icy water and got a grip on the back of her knee. I howled and dragged her leg up onto the bank, and she rolled toward me, heaving the other leg free of the pool in a splash of freezing water. She lay on her back, gasping. I looked across the water and ice of the Mississippi. I didn't see anyone at the barge. Maybe they'd left for the evening. Bikezilla was thrown to the surface. It slammed into the concrete base of the dam and was sucked under. The churning water coming over the dam was tossing it around like a tennis shoe in a washing machine. I shuddered. If we'd fallen in there, neither of us would have survived.
"So cold," Darla said.
She was sopping wet to her waist. The water was already starting to freeze in little icy patches on her coveralls. I moved my wet left arm experimentally. I could barely feel it. Flakes of ice fell off my sleeve.
"We've got to get out of the open."
"All our supplies."
Darla stretched one arm out toward the roller dam. "It's hopeless. They're gone." I stood and helped Darla up. She was shivering violently. We had to hide, had to get warm, and do it in a way that Black Lake couldn't track us. "Come on. Try to stay in the tracks." I pulled her back up the hill, trudging along the path Bikezilla's rear track had made. Darla stumbled and fell. She lay shivering in the snow. I hauled her to her feet. "Can you jog?" I asked. "You've got to warm up."
I'll try.
Darla stumbled up the hill in a shambling half-jog. We were moving a lot slower than I would have liked, but at least we were out of sight of the barge. Darla started to fall, and I caught her again. I looked down and saw that I'd stepped outside of Bikezilla's track. We were leaving a clear trail despite our efforts to stay in the path. Darla fell once more before we made it to the top of the ridge. The woods were silent and still. On the mostly level ground at the top of the hill, Darla stretched out her pace, and we made better time. Maybe the jogging was warming her up, although she was still shivering. I rubbed my wet arm as we ran. I still couldn't feel it. I stopped when we got to the massive spreading oak in the clearing. "We can get off the path without leaving a trail here."
"How?"
Darla asked. "That branch," I pointed above our heads. "I'll boost you up. We'll crawl along it to the trunk, climb around, and crawl out another branch on the far side."
Good idea.
I wasn't so sure it was a good idea. If Darla fell and hurt herself, it would be a disastrously bad idea. And I'd never been much of a tree climber. I don't like heights. "Can you do it?" Darla just nodded, shivering. I squatted and grabbed Darla by her thighs. Water squished out of her coveralls onto my coat. I lifted her high enough that all she had to do was flop her arms over the branch to hang by her armpits. She kicked out. I had to duck to save my head, and got one leg up over the branch. Then she swung herself on top of it and started dragging herself toward the trunk, inchworm style. I jumped and grabbed the branch in both hands, facing away from Darla. I swung my legs back and forth a few times, working up momentum, and then threw them up and around the branch. Then I just had to roll over, pulling myself to the top of the tree limb. Darla was already about halfway to the trunk. I dragged myself along behind her. "There's a great view from back here," I said.
"Quit looking,"
Darla snapped, but I could hear a hint of a smile in her voice. Maybe my stupid joke had worked. I needed something. Anything to distract from the desperation building in my gut. Darla stopped at the oak's huge trunk.
"There's no way to climb around."
"What about that fork in the tree?" I asked.
"Maybe. I might need a boost."
Darla wasn't stuttering or shivering as much. I hoped that was a good sign. I let my legs dangle over either side of the icy branch and scooched over to help. She sat up and threw one knee up on the branch and reached to try to get a handhold in the fork of the tree. I held her waist, trying to keep her steady. Darla stood up on the branch so she could reach farther into the fork. "Push me up!" I put my palms under her butt and shoved. She pulled herself upward until her chest was wedged into the split in the tree. She rested there for a moment and then pulled herself the rest of the way up. "There's a branch here that goes the right way," Darla said. "We can get at least another 30 feet from the path." "Okay, good. I'm coming up." I pulled my knees onto the branch. Standing was tricky. I got 1 foot flat on the ice-coated branch, but I felt wobbly. I stood, trying to keep the unsteadiness in my knees under control and clinging to the trunk. I wasn't all that far off the ground, maybe 10 or 12 feet. There was no real reason to be scared. I focused on the tree trunk and tried to get my breathing under control. In through the nose, out through the mouth, like I'd used for a sparring match in Taekwondo. I reached and got a grip on the fork in the tree. I bent my knees to jump and give myself a head start on pulling myself up, but I slipped, and suddenly I was dangling, my feet clawing futilely at the air. Chapter 20. I kicked out, bashing my toes against the tree trunk. Feet scrabbling against the trunk, I tried to pull myself onto the branch. I didn't have a solid grip on the fork in the tree. My fingers were slipping on the icy bark. Darla's hands wrapped around my left wrist and hauled upward. I strained, pulling myself up until my chest was wedged in the fork. Darla was sitting on a slightly higher branch, reaching down to help me. "Thanks," I grunted. Darla turned and started inching away from the trunk on the new branch, saying, "I think this branch will work best." I scrambled to follow her. The end of the new branch looked none too safe. It was more than 15 feet above the ground, and we couldn't afford to fall and sprain an ankle or worse. But as we inched outward, the branch sagged until it was only 10 or 12 feet over the snow. Darla reached a spot where the branch forked into two smaller limbs that probably wouldn't support both our weight. She grabbed the branch and swung off it, dangling for a moment. "Hold on tight," she said. Then she let go, dropping into the snow below. Before I had a chance to adjust my grip, the branch sprang upward, trying to buck me off. I clung like a squirrel in a thunderstorm. When the motion calmed, I called down to Darla. "You okay?" "Yeah, fine." I inched out to the fork in the limb and slid off, dangling by my hands. I bent my knees a little and let go. When I hit the snow, I let my legs crumple so I wouldn't jam my ankles or knees. Practicing falls at the dojang, we used to roll or slap the floor to break our momentum, but the snow was so deep here that there was really no surface to slap. Still, for once, I was glad for that deep snow. It cushioned my fall. Darla grabbed my hand and hauled me to my feet. "Are you okay?" "Yeah." I looked around. We were at least 60 feet from the path. I hoped that would be enough of a break in the trail that nobody would notice our new track. With any luck, they'd assume we went into the river with Bikezilla and drowned at the base of the roller dam. I struck out on a course perpendicular to our old path. Pushing through the deep snow was hard, cold work. Soon, both of us were shivering again. We left the clearing and entered a dense wood. The trees were all dead and leafless, so it didn't offer much cover. I pushed onward for 20 or 30 minutes, breaking the trail for Darla. I heard a clicking sound behind me and turned. Darla was shivering violently. "Crap! I've got frozen peas rattling around where my brains should be. We've got to get you out of the wind." "I'm k-k-k-k-k-k-k," Darla said around the rattle of her teeth. Her lips were turning blue, and the legs of her coveralls were crusted in ice and snow. She was definitely not okay. But even if our fire-starting kit hadn't gone down with Bikezilla, we couldn't afford a fire now. We were still too close to the barges and the Black Lake guards. "Crap, crap, crap," I whispered. First things first. I could take care of the wind and wet clothes. Maybe. I looked around for the deepest drift, a spot where a cluster of trees had captured and held the blowing snow. "Come on." I took Darla's hand and led her toward the drift,
using my body as a plow. When we got well into the drift, I dug a foxhole, shoveling away the snow with my hands and arms. Darla tried to help, but her arms were shaking so badly she could barely control them. My wet arm in particular was freezing, and I was shivering, but Darla had nearly been dunked. I had to get her dry somehow. Now. As I finished digging, I hit the ash layer under the snow, a grim reminder of the cause of this abominable winter, of the volcano's eruption 10 months ago. Some of the ash came up with the last few armloads of snow and left dirty gray blotches on the white ramparts of my foxhole. We squatted in the foxhole for a few minutes. I wrapped my arms around Darla, hugging her from behind and rubbing her arms. The foxhole kept us out of the wind, but it wasn't warming up Darla. If anything, she was shivering more. "Stand up," I said. "Let's get those wet clothes off." I unlaced her boots and gave one a tug. It came off with a crackle of breaking ice and a squelch of wet sock. When I finished with both boots, I reached up, unzipped her coverall, and started pulling it down off her torso.
"I'm not really in the mood," she said.
"Yeah, me either," I said as I pulled the coverall down over her legs.
"That's a first."
I forced myself to smile. I was terrified she'd freeze to death as I watched, helpless. I started stripping off her jeans. Water had gotten through her coverall at the waist and ankles, so only the knees of her jeans and long johns were dry. When I got her long underwear off, I put my hands on her hips against her pink panties. They were sopping wet with river water. With both my hands against her icy skin, I realized she wasn't shivering as hard. I took that as the worst kind of sign. When the body quits shivering, it's preparing to die. Chapter 21. I stripped off Darla's panties and socks so she stood bottomless in the frozen air. Her bare feet were porcelain white, streaked with blue. She set them in the snow without protest. Obviously, she couldn't feel her feet at all. I had maybe a minute before she started to get frostbite, and not much longer than that before the hypothermia would kill her. I stripped off my boots as fast as I could and squatted on them to keep my socks dry while I pulled off my coveralls. I jammed Darla's feet into my coverall. She was so far gone now that I had to lift each foot and put it in the pant leg for her. I had two pairs of socks on, a wool outer pair and some nylon liners. I stripped off my wool socks and forced them over Darla's feet. My boots didn't fit right without the thick wool socks, and my toes hurt terribly, but I figured that was a good sign. If they quit hurting, I'd know I was in trouble. I thought about what to do with Darla's feet. If I left her in socks, her feet would get wet from the snow. But her boots were sopping. I wrapped my hand in the dry part of her long johns and pushed it up into her boots to try to dry them. I don't know if it helped much, but it was the best I could do. I put the wet boots back on her feet and tied the laces. "Come on, Darla," I said. "You've got to run now." She started to shamble into the snow at the edge of the foxhole. I threw an arm around her waist to stop her. "No, just run in place. We've got to stay hidden until dark." It wouldn't be long. The day was already fading. Darla lifted one foot and set it back down.
"Faster!"
I wanted to yell, but knew I shouldn't. Black Lake might have people out looking for us. Darla started stepping desultorily in place. She lurched from side to side as if drunk, her balance so bad that I kept both hands on her waist, ready to catch her if she started to fall over.
"That's it. Faster, Darla, faster."
She started moving more quickly. I concentrated on holding her upright and trying to jog in place without kicking her. When she started shivering again, I breathed a sigh of pure relief.
What now?" she asked.
"It's maybe an hour till full dark. We can sneak out of here and head back to Uncle Paul's farm."
No. "What do you mean, no? We just lost all our supplies. It's going to get even colder after dark. I don't even know if we can survive tonight. We might have to turn ourselves into Black Lake. Better to wind up in a FEMA camp than frozen to death."
Darla didn't reply. Instead, she started running in place faster. She was shivering hard. Her arms made unpredictable, spastic movements. I backed off a little so I wouldn't get brained. We ran for 15 or 20 minutes. Darla steadily picked up her pace, while I stuck with a comfortable, warming jog. Her shivering gradually subsided. She started pumping her arms instead of waving them around, and her teeth quit chattering. Without any warning, she spun back toward me and quit running. "We are not going back, Alex. We're going forward. Bikezilla's at the bottom of the Mississippi with all our supplies." "I know. You still have the kale seeds?"
"Yeah, and the wheat, but even if we ate all of them, they'd only last a few days."
"Not to eat, to trade."
"Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. We hoof it back to Warren, trade the seeds, and get outfitted for another expedition."
"No, we go forward to Worthington and resupply there."
"How do you know anyone's still in Worthington? They might all be dead or locked in FEMA camps."
"They might be." Darla's shoulders hinted at a shrug. "But they're my people. I know them. They're farmers, used to coming through hard knocks and bad weather. They were already well organized last year. They had water and were digging corn. If anyone's still alive and free in Iowa, it's the folks in Worthington.
And the bandit gangs and Black Lake.
I never thought this trip would be easy. Look, I don't even know how we're going to survive tonight, let alone get to Worthington."
"You still have a hatchet and a knife?"
"Yeah, on my belt. But we need a fire, and the flint went down with Bikezilla."
"We're okay then. With a knife and a hatchet, we've got fire."
"How?"
"Easier to show you. And we should wait for dark and get someplace farther away from the lock, so Black Lake won't spot the fire."
Darla started jogging in place again, as if the conversation were over. I stayed still.
"I don't want to get you killed, Darla."
"We're only in this situation because you insisted on going after that wheat."
Much as I hated to admit it, she was right.
"I know. I'm sorry."
Darla shrugged.
"It's okay. We're tougher to kill than you give us credit for. We've got money, kale seeds, and wheat kernels. We've got a knife, a hatchet, and some clothes. We'll get to Worthington, buy supplies, and then go break your mom and dad out of the FEMA camp in Maquoketa. We'll be okay."
Half an hour ago, Darla had nearly frozen to death, and now she was trying to talk me into continuing our trek. She was certifiably grade A, prime cut crazy.
"I love you."
"Love you too. Now get your ass jogging so you don't freeze."
"I've got to figure out something to do with these clothes."
I picked up Darla's coveralls, thinking I'd wring the water out of them, but they were frozen solid. They crackled, and ice flaked off the legs. I beat the coveralls on a nearby tree trunk to loosen them up and knock off more ice. I thought for a moment about how best to carry them. I could stuff the coveralls into my coat, but they'd melt and get my chest wet. We needed to keep the coveralls and dry them out, but I couldn't afford to get hypothermic. Finally, I loosened my belt and tucked the coveralls through the back so they dangled along the back of my legs. I repeated the process with Darla's pants and long johns, beating them against a tree and tucking them into my belt. Darla was still jogging in place, but now she had a silly grin on her face.
"What?" I said.
"You should see yourself. You look ridiculous."
For a second I was annoyed, but then I realized that, yeah, I probably did.
"What, you don't appreciate my superpowers? I'm clothesline man. Faster than a tumbling dryer, stronger than the scorching sun, saving the day by flying across the snow to dry all your clothes." I rotated my hips, making the clothing swing around me in an arc. Darla was laughing now. The joke seemed pretty lame to me, but probably anything would have been funny after the past few hours.
"I can even dry these." I picked her pink panties up out of the snow.
Her mouth curled at one side.
"Usually you have the opposite effect."
I thought about that for a moment, and then felt my face heat despite the frigid temperature.
"Actually, forget about those. I'll just go commando for a while."
"Okay." I pushed the panties into the snowbank to hide them, although I couldn't have said why I bothered. Then I resumed jogging.
I needed to warm up. Despite our jogging, we both started shivering again as night fell and the temperature dropped. It got so dark I could barely see the piles of snow around our foxhole. How are we going to figure out which way to go?